welcome to a Too Much Effing Perspective Rock and Roll Recreation, where we replay one of our effing favorite episodes from the past. I'm your host, Alan Keller.
And I'm your co-host, Alex Hoffman. And today, we're featuring our hilarious back and forth with Emmy Award-winning actress and Modern Family star, Julie Bowen.
As you know, Alex, Julie and I met at preschool.
Right. There's no way that you two went to preschool together.
No. Our kids did. Besides, when I was a kid, preschool was called something else. Birth. There was no such thing as preschool.
Oh, brother. How old are you anyway?
I lost count, but I'm definitely not getting any younger waiting for this episode to start.
Okay, then let's get right to our chat with Modern Family's Julie Bowen. But first, a short break.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.
Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like the Lumineers, Andy DeFranco, Wolf Peck, Keb Moe, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask? Good
morning. I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon.
Okay, we're going to start out with two words, which I think exemplify a Julie Bowen Spinal Tap moment. Here it goes. Amy's orgasm.
Oh, okay. So it's on my IMDb. Sounds like a porn. It'd be a better story if it was a porn. It really would. But it's actually very sort of artsy, artory. It was about dating. I had a small part in it where I go on a date and I fuck Willie Garson. R.I.P. Willie.
Oh, I know. R.I.P. Willie.
I'll cry. Nice guy. I'll cry. Miss him a lot. It's one of the first times we ever worked together, but we're friends ever since. And it was called something else entirely, like Hello Dolly, or, you know, whatever. It had a different name. And I end up getting cut out of the movie, except for, like, I walk by in a scene or I'm sitting in an office in a scene or something. So I'm essentially an extra, and it's on my IMDb, and when it gets released, it's called Amy's Orgasm. So for all intents and purposes, I'm a background in a non-porn porn.
That's her life story, I think, isn't it?
That's sad. It was weird because I was like, I don't know who she talked to, but obviously she thought Amy's Orgasm would be a catchier title. People still talking about it, but yeah. I don't even get to have sex with Willie Garson in it anymore.
Let's say who Willie Garson is.
Most well known for his role in Sex and the City as Stanford Blatch, as Sarah Jessica's gay bestie, but also on Suits, and his IMDb was at his funeral. It was like a total comedy show. It was page after page after page. It was a roast, really. And they made fun of him for being the guy who was still doing day playing parts. But he was a phenomenal actor, a phenomenal friend. And I miss him.
To Willie.
To Willie. But he did not spontaneously combust like a drummer.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing it back. Julie, I'm going to constantly get away from Spinal Tap to Alex's chagrin. So you'll bring us back, okay?
Oh, because I rewatched. I am prepped.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I had not watched it in so long.
So what is your favorite scene from This is Spinal Tap and why?
The lyrics of Squat in Your Pea Patch. What's the song? Sex Farm.
Sex Farm.
I had to stop and look up just the lyrics while I was watching it again. That was one of the hardest laughs I've ever had. get out my
plowing your bean fields
and poking your hay.
Poking your hay.
Weren't both things also in Amy's orgasm? Weren't they?
Right.
They may have been in, but they were cut out along with me. I remember the general arc of the story, and I remembered Stonehenge and None More Black, and It Goes to 11, like all those classic things. But the lyrics of Sex Farm took me to my knees. I could not stop laughing. And Michael McKean, he was hot in that movie. Like, are you two both straight?
Still early in my life.
He is smoking hot in that movie. That horrible hair and everything. I was like, I have never registered that before either. How behind the like party perm and the crimp on hair that he has that goes around his face, he's sort of looking out and he's got that sweet skin and he's so earnest. And his love affair with Nigel.
Well, are you really saying that he's hotter than Nigel? Because remember, Nigel turns around and shows his tight pants and then they fake spank him?
Yeah, they go, boo, 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 with the guitar, whatever it's called, on the neck.
Yeah.
The leg, right. the arm neck, of the guitar. The butt was such a gimme. It was so obvious. It's like girls' boobs. But really, that isn't what does it for me. I like seeing that Michael McKean, and when he's talking about how his girlfriend's going to come and she knows he eats too much sugar. And he can hear it in her throat. Like, he's so earnest. And I never realized
that his larynx is fat. His larynx sounds fat. You know, he also married a beautiful woman. He married Annette O'Toole, Michael McKean.
Annette O'Toole?
Yeah, that's who he's married to.
I did not know that. And I worked with him on Boston Legal a long time ago.
Really?
So we were in a courtroom, like one of those courtroom scenes that lasts like, it's only 3 days, but those are 12-hour days. You feel like you really get to know the person. I couldn't talk to him. This is my affliction. My affliction is I can't talk to people if I have a crush on them or like if they're my star crush. I cannot speak to them. Can't look at them. I stare at the floor and rock like a...
So that's why you stammered a lot around me when our kids were in preschool together.
That is true. When you're selling your cashew cheese at the farmer's market, look away.
Yeah, it was hot. Guy selling nut cheese, right?
Was it called Allen's Nut Butter or Allen's...
That's another product. We had a lot of product placement in Amy's Orgasm.
Yeah. I thought you were supposed to be bringing it back to Spinal Tap, not Amy's Orgasm. So it was not until much later that I kind of got in touch with the hairband music of the 80s, and I still didn't love it.
Yeah.
I did not love it. I wasn't into it.
A lot of it hasn't aged very well, although I will say that my first three concerts, number one was The Who on their first farewell tour.
Good.
That's not a hairband.
No, not a hairband.
He's working up to it.
Got it.
Number two was Black Sabbath.
Black Sabbath, Iron Man.
Not exactly a hair band. They were certainly pioneers in heavy metal. But instead of it being Ozzy Osbourne singing, it was Ian Gillan from Deep Purple, who had a ton of hair. So
that's a lot of hair, but it's not really like a hair. It's not like the way I think of those, like really structured haircuts.
Well, the opener was Quiet Riot. So definitely, come on, feel the noise. So absolutely hair band. And by the way, this is all in Green Bay, Wisconsin. My third was Judas Priest, again, a metal pioneer with the band Great White opening, full-on hair band.
Ooh. Oh, Great White before in Happier Times.
In Happier Times.
Oh, you saw Great White prior to the fire?
To the great event in Providence, Rhode Island, wasn't it? At the Living Room?
Right.
And you know what? Great White did not learn because they were one of the first bands to have a concert without masks during COVID.
Oh, that's right.
They just want to kill everybody that ever liked them. And yeah,
oh
I do too.
Oh my God. Wait a minute. Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious.
Sorry. Let's hear about your hair bands.
Well, I was just going to say that's full Spinal Tap too, because Great White has done that classic thing where they've actually split. And there are two bands that kind of use the name Great White. Like one's the original singer and one's the original guitar player. They don't play together anymore, but both tour under Great White. That was the show that you referenced, Alan, didn't even have the original singer. It was Great White V2.5.
No, it wasn't. It was Great White and then even Greater White.
Ah.
Because they were good marketers.
Is that true? Is Alan, are you just pulling this out of your butt? Do you know that?
No, I was just kidding. That. It was a joke.
But it's a good one.
Is that what you're so surprised about, that I had a good one?
Yeah. No, just that, like, Greater White, that would be a good, you know, you're right. I'm not Great White. I'm Greater White.
I'm Greater White.
Yeah.
So, okay, I want to spin back to your original thing about Sex Farm, because it's apropos to something. So there's two things I want to do in this interview. Slow down my speaking.
Why?
And I'm going to change my laugh completely because I hate my laugh. So I'm going to be laughing like this today. Ha ha. Okay. Just so you know. Okay. Anyway.
Are you going to still say, though, Sex Farm, which makes it sound like the most innocent place ever? Like, you would do great in sex child trafficking because you'd be like, I'll go with you, you scary man in a windowless white van, because you're like, come on, get in my sex farm.
Can you hear that? Every time I say Chicago, I always say Chicago, but I don't fix any of the other ahs, so it's futile. But anyway, so Julie and I know each other from preschool. And her son, Oliver, was a classmate of my daughter, Gidget.
That's right.
And I remember very clearly that you said to Lois, Lois is my wife.
He married way above his pay grade.
I did.
Okay, so I was pregnant and I said I couldn't get a job.
And then within a year, I think, you are starring in the biggest show on network TV. Which is kind of similar to the trajectory of Spinal Tap. They're ready to hang it up. They don't think anyone wants them. Next thing you know, Sex Farm is charting in Japan, and they're back on top again. You always had a decent career, and I'm sure you didn't think you were never going to work again, but that was a pretty significant turnaround, right?
I always figured I'd work. You know, I'd always been a jobber, but that was a big fun one, and I was really grateful for it. And so the day the pilot got picked up, I was in labor and my boss called, but I'm like, gotta go. And I just pushed out two babies. And I'm like, you want to know what changed my life more? Three children in diapers, slots 1, 2, and 3. And then I would nod off in chairs and sit up and go to work and come back and do babies. So everything was kind of upside down and crazy. I don't think I necessarily got to have as much fun, maybe, as some of my co-stars who didn't have little babies. There's a lot less going out, I'll tell you that.
That must have been tough.
Imagine if all the guys in Spinal Tap show up in Japan, each one has 2, 3 babies, and they have to take care of them. Like, they can't just offload them on the wives or the girlfriends. They actually have to deal with them. And it's like, in the arms while playing the guitar, putting it to the side, picking it up, breastfeeding. That is more of an accurate parallel.
There's a bunch of things to unpack there. You know, we had a really fun conversation with Zia McCabe from the Dandy Warhols.
Yes.
She and her husband took their baby on the road when the child was still an infant. And they were both working, her performing and him doing some production. So she would literally hand the baby to like a babysitter or the promoter's daughter or whoever had been brought in to provide childcare, do a shot of tequila, go up on stage to play for a couple of hours. So we heard some great stories about mothering on the road.
Was she doing the pump and dump? When you've caved and you've had that drink and you know that all this liquid gold in your boobs, which are now to your knees, rock hard, you have to dump it because it's filled with liquor.
Yeah, I don't know about the dump part. But
Right.
Yeah, you got to pump and dump.
Yeah.
If you have that drink, you're like, oh no. Although some people do say, well, just drink beer. It's good for the babies. Well,
of course. We're from Wisconsin. We would absolutely agree with that.
I don't know. I never tried.
Julie, when you auditioned for the pilot, were you pregnant then? Did you show up for that audition with Spanx, or it was fully known?
There was no hiding this. There was a regular baby-sized pregnancy and then another baby on top of that. I mean, these twins were big. They just kept bringing me in for auditions, and it was heading towards late February. The twins were due in May. And I guess legally, like, you're not allowed to ask how old somebody is or what they weigh and how pregnant are you. They weren't even allowed to acknowledge it. They were like, just looking at me. And I found out later, they were sure I was going to go any day. And they were like, she can have this baby and we could shoot at the end of March maybe. And then finally one day it became clear that I was never going to get this job. They just kept calling me in and staring at my stomach. So I put myself up for another job where the character was actually pregnant. I was like, Modern Family's the better show, but I need a job, not to hold out for the perfect show that's never going to hire me. Then when they found out that I put myself in the position to accept that other job, they did a little scramble back and said, no, we really want you. We just don't know when that baby's coming. And I said, oh, there's two of them. they're not coming till May. And they were like, oh shit, we're trying to wait you out.
I read that if your babies hadn't come out by May 7th, by May 9th, it was written in the contract that you had to have a C-section. Is that true?
No, that is not true, Alan. I induced on May 7th. I was like, it's time, people. I couldn't walk. It was ugly. My sister is a doctor. She is a specialist in infectious diseases, HIV, TB cross-infection until COVID. And now she's saving the world. But she has worked at the VA and stared, and I mean quite literally, into the butts of some dark situations, okay? And I get undressed in front of her and she goes, ew. Ew, from a doctor who has been looking inside of butts for years. She just said, ew.
There's all this press about you hankering for Harry Styles.
I love it. I just wanted to get to him.
Mrs. Robinson.
I just wanted to get to him. It's on Saturday Night Live, they just had a skit called Why Did You Like That? About like why people heart something on Instagram and all just trying to get attention and hoping to get laid. And I am taking advantage as far and wide as I can to talk about Harry Styles because maybe one day he'll reach out and be like, I heard what you said, love. And he'll come a knocking.
I can't believe he hasn't called or DM'd or done whatever. I mean,
have you seen his girlfriend?
He goes out with Olivia Wilde. But let's just say you wound up with Harry Styles, okay? Then you're the Janine, right, of the band. Are you going to make Harry Styles wear a zodiacal sweatshirt? What would you make him wear on stage?
If I was Janine, what would I make him wear?
Well, if you're the Janine in the band, because every band has, whether it's a male or female, they have this intruder that comes in and changes the band dynamic. So would you be a hands-off person or would you be a Janine and get your tentacles into that band and make them?
I think it's so much worse. I'm not even a Janine and I know that this is about Spinal Tap, but I think I might be a Yoko, like a black crow sitting next to him on the piano bench doing like Sudoku or crossword puzzles and then occasionally going,
So you saw the documentary.
I mean, over and over again.
Didn't they wear white though?
Yeah, but because of the hair. She is like the girl that comes out of the well in that movie. What is that movie called?
What's that? Naomi Watts.
It's The Ring.
Yes.
Listen, the Beatles are so popular and their music is so omnipresent that to me it was like wallpaper. And I never really appreciated it until I saw that documentary. And then I was like, holy shit, this is not wallpaper, people. I don't know if you know this. Let me educate you.
Newsflash. Yeah.
Guys, there's this band. They're called the Beatles, maybe? Is it how am I saying that right? They're English. They've been around for a while. Fascinating story. No, but I absolutely fell back in love with them watching that documentary, much like I fell back in love with Spinal Tap watching the movie again.
Can you share a professional Spinal Tap moment on the set of Modern Family?
I would say it would not be the set of Modern Family, but we used to have to go to all of these events to promote the show for, they were sort of internal, like the show was doing really well. So they would fly us to Vegas to meet all the advertisers and all the local station managers from blah, 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 and all the people that were buying ad time or selling ad time or whatever. And you get shunted from dinner to dinner, room to room, and be like, hey, guys, what's going on? And one time they flew us on like a Fox jet to New York for one of these dinners and then turn around and go back. And you start to think maybe you're pretty big time and you don't have to do a whole lot. You sort of walk in and shake hands and walk out. But oddly, the less prestigious these gatherings, the weirder they would get. And we were taken to Vegas once to meet with maybe, I don't know, Midwest regional sales reps or station managers. And we are in this room and they hand out to all of us Sofia Vergara, Ed O'Neill, Ty Burrell, Eric Stone Street, me, Jesse Tyler Ferguson, rainbow afro wigs, and tell us to put them on and party. And we're like, yes, sir. And we're in this room and looking around, and it was probably 2010, maybe 11, pre all of us being responsible for our own wokeness, but definitely no matter what, it was a bad idea. And just getting that feeling and looking around and seeing these people who I love and respect so much, and we all start eyeballing each other. It was kind of one of those things like, look away, look away. I guess like it's at an orgy, you never make eye contact. I've heard this. And everyone's trying to mind their own business and party with Kevin from whatever station it was. These were lovely people, but they were trying to have like, it was more of a, the idea was more inspired, I believe, by fun makers at a bar mitzvah. And we had become the fun makers with really inappropriate headwear. And one by one, you could sort of see out of the corner of your eye, this giant rainbow afro kind of being pulled down. We're like, we've got them. They're laughing and enjoying themselves. Now can we burn these rainbow afros that we were requested to wear and dance around in? It was deeply uncomfortable, but that was Spinal Tapian in that, don't we get top billing over the puppet show, or no? We are the puppet show.
Are you sure that you weren't just at one of those infamous clown traffickers conventions in Vegas?
Ugh.
A clown orgy.
Clown orgy.
That's the only thing that would make it better. It was a clown orgy. Still, don't make eye contact. Don't make eye contact. It was just, you
Amy's
know,
it's clown what, orgasm.
Amy's clown orgasm. It's bad enough to when you're singing for your supper, literally, and like kissing ass to people because that's part of the job, sadly. And then you don't want to look over and see someone who you really love and respect doing the same thing. It's just, it's okay if no one sees this, but we all saw it. Yeah.
Okay. So you lived through this experience of clown wigs with your cast, and you were on Modern Family for 11, 12 years, right?
11 years, 11 seasons.
11
yeah.
years. If we're talking about archetypes, who would fit in the Nigel, David, Derek template?
Oh, God, that's loaded. I feel like the people that come in knowing each other are the Nigel, David, right? So I would say that as far as coming in, it goes beyond the cast. We had two co-creators of our show, Chris Lloyd and Steve Levitan, and they both had worked with Ty Burrell before and were huge fans of his. And I believe Ty has remained very close to one, if not both of them, to this day. But they always had a relationship outside of work. And because Ty Burrell is the most even-tempered, kind, he does not even know the word conflict and does not get involved. He's an amazingly chill dude. He's maintained that close relationship that he came in with. Who would be the Derek? I mean, who's the chunky keyboardist? And he talks really slow and weird. That's me. I always feel like that's me.
You're Viv Savage?
Yeah, like
I
I'm just happy.
I have to get my new laugh on for this one. Ha, 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 ha.
Ha, ha, ha. I always felt like, I'm so lucky to be in this band. You know, like I would look around and be like, I didn't know a lot of them were improvers, and Jesse and Eric sort of would have to fit into the Derek slot, I guess, of that third, because they were so fucking funny and they were so sharp and so on it. And I was just off to the side like, I can't believe I get to be here. I can't believe I get to be here. And I would have to say that our rotating group of lady writers would be the drummers because they never lasted. And I don't know why. We did have one, Elaine Coe, who's remarkable and was there all the way through. But I started taking them to lunch as each new female writer was hired. There were not very many.
Smart.
And then I started just sending them emails saying, I'd love to have a meal or a drink with you, but I'm afraid I will curse you and you will become the drummer from Spinal Tap, because every time I do, these women just go and they're gone again.
Lunch with Julie is the equivalent of a spontaneous combustion.
Yeah. I mean, more than one spontaneously combusted, the drummers. Because they talk about one and then we see one.
Right. Yeah. Very good. That's exactly what happens.
And I suppose, does your sort of personal mantra track with that of Viv Savage? Have a good time all the time.
All the time. Is that parting words?
That's just one bit of dialogue, line. I think, in the whole movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think mine would be, don't say too much or they'll notice you have no talent. And that was me in the back. Like, I'm just making my wacky faces and hoping that nobody notices that I got lucky as hell.
This is the story of Whitney Houston.
This is the story of Kurt Cobain.
Of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series.
About how they died, why they died, and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with,
the way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app.
And subscribe now.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.
Julie, you once did me a favor that will be enshrined one day in the Hall of Fame of Goofy Favors. So I have a friend in Milwaukee, Kama, who knows nothing about popular culture.
Okay.
In fact, once I mentioned Will Ferrell, and he thought I was talking about the guy who started the Ferrell's ice cream parlor. Anyway, so you once came over to my house to do a read-through for a pilot I wrote that was getting shopped.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Keegan-Michael Key was there, maybe Laura Keitlinger, Mo Collins. I don't really remember. But I do remember telling Kama he was super excited because he had a crush on you from when you were on the show, Ed. And to be frank, I didn't know who you were at the time, but Kama did. So after the read-through, I went up to you and asked if you would record a salacious message on his voicemail. And you did it.
I did.
Oh,
you did.
Fun.
It was so awesome. It's his treasure.
What an angel.
Yes, that was so nice.
I'm really doing God's work. God, what did I say? Was it really dirty?
No, you kind of dialed it back because I said, Julie, you can't say Amy's orgasm on this.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Way to bring it around, Alan.
Yeah, it's like it's a motif.
Yeah, you can't say lick my love pump either. Just do not say those.
Lick my love pump. Oddly, I forgot about that. What are they playing? And they turn
the Mach piece, Mozart and Bach.
It's Mozart and Bach. It's Mach. And it's called? Lick my love pump. I had forgotten about that and how earnest they all are. And I forgot most of all about the love story that is at the center of it.
The guys.
David and Nigel. And when he looks at him off to the side of the stage and he's like, come on. It's as good as any romantic movie ever.
Julie, I think it was last summer, I woke up to a news story that said you had saved the life of a hiker. And I remember it was kind of funny because the story kept evolving during the day. And later in the afternoon, it went to Julie Bowen helped save the life of this hiker. And by the end of the day, it was determined that you had nothing to do with it. In fact, I think you were the source for that iteration. Can you explain?
I was hiking in Moab in August, which is, it's not recommended. It's a bit warm, with my sister and her kids and my brother-in-law and my kids. And We were in Arches National Park and we were going to that big, huge, cool arch. You've seen it on all the postcards. And my sister and I are walking along and very little shade. It's very hot. And there is a woman sitting down in like the shade of a bush on this path where it comes together. And as we pass her, she keels over flat on her face, does not break her fall at all. She's passed out and there's blood coming out of her face. Oh, and I don't know where from, because I'm not a doctor. I'm just like, bloody face. We got a bloody face. And my sister Annie is a full, actual Harvard-educated doctor and starts taking her pulse, props her up, puts pressure on a face region to stop bleeding, brings her to, starts asking her all these salient questions such as, out of the blue, do you have diabetes? I'm like, how the fuck did she think of that? She's like, I went to med school, dummy. And the woman goes, yeah, I do have diabetes. I'm like, oh, I cannot even believe this miracle of modern medicine. And hikers are stopping. Annie gets some candy and some water because the woman needs some glucose. And meanwhile, I'm just twiddling my thumbs and I go, are you with somebody? She said, yeah, my son and my husband. And I said, do you have their number? And she hands me her phone and there's zero service. It's zero. We're in a national park. So I go and stand on a rock and just hold this cell phone in various positions looking for service. That is my contribution to the day. That is it.
You're like a human satellite dish.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me? I'm that guy just standing there. But I finally did get through to the son. He didn't understand what the text was, but it was like, come back, your mother has fallen, whatever. So they come back and we've got the mom propped up. Minnie John was her name. And she's like, oh my God. And she's bleeding and she's got some stuff happening to her face. Maybe a broken nose, maybe some other stuff. But I don't know because I'm not a doctor. And she said, you look familiar. And she goes, have I lost my mind? So she thinks now she's going crazy because she can't place me. And I'm also not going to be like, have you seen Modern Family? She's like, who are you? And I'm like, I don't know. Who am I? So I don't want to torture her. So my sister sees that she's getting agitated by not knowing who I am. Because she's like, are you my sister? Are you my cousin? Did I forget? Have I lost my mind? And I had my hair in a ponytail and I jokingly pulled it out and go, does this help? And she goes, no. And now she's really upset, right? Because she doesn't fucking know who I am. And she shouldn't. But I'm put in this horrible position of then having to tell her because she's so distraught. I'm going, I'm an actress on a TV show. It's called Modern Family. She goes, oh, I know that. I know that show. So she's so happy that she hasn't lost her mind. But then she also says, can we get a picture? And she posts this on Facebook and it becomes Julie Bowen saves hiker. But very bottom, sister was also there. Then it goes, sister who was a doctor was also there. And then slowly the sister doctor makes its way further and further up until finally it is clear that Annie has done everything. I did nothing. And in fact, in the retelling, all I did was pull my hair out of a ponytail and be like, do you know who I am? Which was just mortifying because that is also not what happened, Alan. But I did nothing. And Annie did everything and I got all the credit. Sorry, that's my dog, Gertie, barking.
That's all right.
Gertrude Stein.
I just saw her grave in Paris.
You did?
Yes.
Is she buried next to Alice? B. Toklas, her lifelong partner?
I didn't pay attention to any of the graves that weren't marked in the book.
God,
She's far from Jim Morrison, that's all I know.
I did a horror movie in which I had to get down, bone, knock the boots on Jim Morrison's grave.
Are you serious?
Yes. Originally, we were supposed to go to Paris to do it at Père Lachaise, but thank God they built it on a set somewhere. Because if cemeteries freak me out to begin with, and then to really feign, I think it's even worse to feign sex. If you were really having sex, the passion may have carried you away. But like to set up lights and like have a guy with a pole and be like, oh, that wasn't good for sound. And you're like, sorry, Jim, that would have been awful. Just awful.
You were in a movie called Mixtape.
Yes.
And being the deep thinker that I am, I was lying awake in the middle of the night last night thinking about this interview and pondering this existential question. What five songs would be on Julie Bowen's ultimate mixtape?
Is this for driving alone? Or is it to try and get somebody to like you?
What mixtape would you send Harry Styles?
That's so complicated. Because remember when you made a mixtape and it was in order and each one had a meaning and it had to be progressively like, I really like you. This is what I really like about you. I'm super into you. But I'm also backing off at the end in case you don't like me back. Okay, for me, because it's easier. It's easier if it's just for me.
Sure.
100% Led Zeppelin, Over the Hills and Far Away, because I can listen to it.
Cool.
All day. I okay. never get tired of it. Never. It gets me excited every time. And I don't know why. That would be number one. Gosh. I would go 70s rock. Maybe Mother's Little Helper or Paint It Black. I would only pick one Rolling Stones, though. I only pick one from each, I think. I would do Get Back because that documentary has gotten me so much back into that music that I was like, cool. Wow. And I'd have to say one more. But here's the thing. Like, I'm obsessed with Ash, who's that girl singer, you know, with the blonde hair. Oh, she's so good. I really love her. So I'd throw one in there as a palate cleanser to bring me back, but I'd play it over and over again, too. And then The Cars. Which is that weird?
No, Cars are great. Let's Go, Best Friend's Girl.
No.
Let the
no,
Good Times Roll.
No, 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 no. Wait. Just What I Needed.
Oh.
I guess you're just what I needed. Yeah.
That, awesome. At the beginning of that, I don't mind you coming here. Like I.
Wasting all my time.
And all of these are songs I can listen to on endless repeat, which is why I'm putting them on this. This is my endless, like the Infinite Drive Across Kansas playlist. Last one would be Don't Think Twice, It's All Right, Bob Dylan.
I thought you were going to put a Kansas song on there.
No, like I'm putting on
Don't My Wayward Son.
Carry on my
wayward son.
All of those I could listen to over and over and never get sick of right now.
Where can people find out more about you, what you're doing these days, your podcast, Quitters?
Well, you can listen to Quitters podcast on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts, probably where you get this podcast. And that's what I'm working on right now. I'm producing a movie up in Canada. Hopefully, you know what? It's Disney Plus's first TV 14, and it's called Prom Pact. That's with Milo Mannheim, Cameron Mannheim's son. There you have it. Hopefully that movie's coming out, I think, prom season next year. We're shooting it right now.
Julie, thank you so much. You are fantastic. This was really fun and really good seeing you again.
Thank you, guys.
We hope you enjoyed this blast from the past. Check out our other episodes with members of Garbage, The Pixies, Slater Kinney, Drive-By Truckers, Violent Femmes, Old Crow Medicine Show, and even comedian David Cross, artist Shepard Fairey, and many, many others. You can find our entire catalog on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. I'm Alex Hoffman.
And I'm Alan Keller. Thanks for joining us on
Too Much Effing Perspective.
Although it would be as great as having armadillos in our trousers, this podcast is not affiliated with This Is Spinal Tap, and no person or entity connected with the film has sponsored or endorsed its content. This podcast is not affiliated, sponsored, or licensed by Authorized Spinal Tap LLC or Century of Progress Productions.
Too Much Effing Perspective is a Milwaukee Talkies original.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan. And this is the Corner of Gray Street Podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the corner of Gray Street.
Evergreen Podcast Network.